because we talked about it a little bit in our show in the past. Julie Hayden, Chuck Bonnywell. Chuck is, he was doing lawyerly stuff, always wandering in. He's coming in the door at the last second. But we have with us here in studio Marianne Goodland. Folks who listen to us are familiar with her. We've had her on before from Colorado Politics. Chuck, bursting in the door. Wanted to talk because we've been getting a lot of emails and texts and things like that from people saying, what's the deal with this POLIS thing? And Marianne, you had a great column or article, I guess, in Colorado Politics about all of this. And let me, before we dive into that, because we talked about it a little bit in our show in the past, but let me make clear, just so folks aren't confused, there was the Dismiss POLIS recall effort that was the group circulating the petitions, and then said they gathered like roughly 300,000, not enough, though, to submit them, so they didn't. But they were the group that was actually circulating the petitions.
Resist POLIS PAC.
Right.
Yeah.
And there was, but the group that we're talking about that I have for some time suspected, and we'll get into this, was either Democrat operatives or con artists or some combination of the above, is the official POLIS group. And maybe let's start by saying they've gotten themselves in a little bit of hot water with the Secretary of State's office or with some of the people who donated to them. So why don't you just jump in and explain that?
Okay. The name of this group is the Official Recall Governor Jared POLIS Committee. It's an issue committee, and this committee's been around for a long time under other names. It was started off a couple of years ago. Their target at that time was Governor John Hickenlooper. They never did anything to start a recall of Governor Hickenlooper. So you fast forward into this year, and you had things like the red flag law, the oil and gas bill, the sex ed bill, different things, and national popular vote, of course, right, which will be on the ballot next year. And people started talking about recalls again. So this group changed its name to the Official Recall Jared POLIS, and the official is an honorific that they gave themselves.
Right.
There's nothing official about them.
Okay.
And all of these different groups were actually all at one point just one group, but there was a split in philosophy, among other things. And so the folks who formulated Dismiss POLIS and Resist POLIS went off and did their own thing, and that has led to some very interesting conversations between the various groups on social media. They're all screaming. They've been screaming at each other for months.
Forever, yes.
Forever. So the Dismiss POLIS, Resist POLIS people went out, did the petitions, collected the signatures, didn't turn them in.
And invited the official recall
to join in.
And they had no interest whatsoever. Right. In fact, they were telling their people, their donors, and they raised more money than anyone else. They were telling their donors that the people who were out doing the petitions were out there doing data mining and all
right,
kinds of different things, and they weren't serious and don't sign the petitions. And in fact, most of the money that they spent, the official POLIS group, was on advertising, trying to persuade people not to sign the petitions.
So, which is truly bizarre.
If you really wanted to recall POLIS,
you would either join in or you'd be neutral and wait till it either failed or didn't fail, and then do it yourself. I mean, there's little.
So I was skeptical about them. Well, so fast forward to now,
to last week actually,
and we found out what they've been doing besides the advertising with some of the other money that they had raised, and that's the big issue.
They raised a total of about $114,000,
which for Republicans a lot. Democrats, that's nothing, but for Republicans, that's a lot of money.
Well, given that you didn't have the Republican establishment backing this,
right.
You know, this was really just small groups of people who were involved in this particular group, this official POLIS group. So they raised $114,000, and a couple of weeks ago, we found out that that Juliandra Fuentes, who is the person who runs this, had put $29,000 into a committee that she also runs called Colorado for Trump. And that didn't go over well with a lot of the donors. They're like, what are you doing?
Right.
And the Trump campaign also did not take kindly to this. The RNC said, you have no official ties and you're using Trump's name, and we will take action if you don't drop it. She hasn't done that yet.
So don't give to that group. Right.
Yeah. So that's still out there. But then last week, the filing that they did identified $11,000 in payments to three members of the board. Now, when a committee is shutting down, and they had said that they were,
right,
they told Kyle Clark at 9 News that they were shutting the committee down, you have certain places that you can send that money. You can send it to another committee, as they did with that.
They made up the Trump committee.
Or you can send it to a charity. That's it. You are not allowed to put that money in your own pocket. The board, Shane Donnelly, who was the guy who actually founded this group a couple of years ago, got $5,000.
For what?
Gifts? Well, the initial filing said that it was gifts. A thank you gift. The purpose line on the filing said board gift, and that's an important word here. Thank you for caring about Colorado. And then two other people, the board secretary, Lisa Pasco, and Renee McGill, who is the lead, whatever that means, for Weld County, both of them got $3,000 apiece, and the filing said the same thing, board gift. Well, our story came out at about 2-ish Thursday afternoon. 4:15, they amended that report.
Well, it's not a gift.
What was it then?
Well, it changed from...
They didn't give the money back.
Oh, no. That didn't happen. They changed the category from gift to consultant and professional service. And this is a catch-all that committees use for all kinds of stuff. They use it for advertising. They use it for lawyers' fees, just all kinds of different things falls under that category. And a lot of times it's not even appropriate, but
that's
just nobody fusses about it. So that's just how it goes. But the purpose line, and this is where it gets important again, said board approved. Thank you for caring about Colorado. So it still implies that it is a gift. And lots of us have been trying to get a hold of Fuentes to ask her about this. Finally, late Friday, she spoke to KDVR.
Yes, mm-hmm. That was an interesting conversation.
Yeah, and she had three reasons for what the board had done. The first was, this is fake news.
And we'll go there because she's been trying that for a while.
She said, this is all fake news. And I went, A legal filing with the Secretary of State, fake news, okay. That was reason one. Reason number two, an intern had done the filing and made a mistake. That was reason number two. But reason number three is the one that just had my jaw on the floor, which was, well, these people needed the money. One of them has a sister who's got cancer, and the other one's, her husband lost his job in the oil and gas industry, so they really needed the money, refutes everything else that she had said.
Right.
Yes, those were gifts. Now, the thing about campaign finance law in Colorado, the Secretary of State's not going to do anything about this unless someone files a complaint.
Yeah. Matt Arnold, but yeah.
No, I don't think so on this one. Not on this one. But so that's the next thing that I'm watching for is to see. And they've already had a campaign finance complaint filed against them by a donor who said that they had been asking for their money back and they wouldn't do it. The committee has never refunded a single donation.
But they've paid off themselves.
They've paid off their attorney, Scott Gessler. Scott Gessler got $9,500 out of that.
Wow,
out of that committee.
I'm shocked. A little bit surprised that he's decided to.
Was that early on or was that recently?
This was a series of four payments, I believe. So it was like a retainer fee or something. You know, it was four different payments. So now we're waiting to see if anybody actually files a complaint about that because our campaign finance enforcement system is citizen driven.
Let me make sure
it's hard to know what it's driven these days.
That too, but for intents and purposes, it's citizen driven. If a donor wants to complain that they've asked for their money back, and that the committee won't give it to them, that's going to be a little hard because the campaign finance complaint that was filed, it was about 6 weeks ago or so, the Secretary of State dismissed it because even though the purpose of the committee is to recall the governor, there isn't anything that says you actually have to do it.
Right, which is a big issue. But let me just once again, Chuck Bonnywell and Julie Hayden talking with Marianne Goodland about her article in Colorado Politics. And this is something we followed, Lucy. And I think it's important to keep emphasizing because we like the dismiss polis people.
Well, they did what they promised to do.
They did what they promised to do. This is
yes.
a group that from the beginning tried to undermine them. My question is, well, first, I want to get into what you think the motive is, but when they were the official recall Hickenlooper, did they raise money there? And you said they never did anything to recall.
Minimally.
Okay, not very much. Okay.
Not anywhere near what they raised this year.
And so what they did, though, is they not only didn't spend the money actually trying to recall Polis.
They fought the recall of Polis.
They fought. They used the money to fight the recall. They gave some of the money to themselves. That they, and who knows what they did with some of them. I mean, I think it.
Well, I think
Let me just finish.
No, I think the listing is probably accurate. They gave it to Marianne Fuentes and her new group.
Julianne Ruller,
and they gave it to all these
board members.
And other than that, they just kept it.
Yeah, they just kept it.
They just kept it.
They've still got about $14,000 left in the bank, so it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Yeah, well,
Julianne Fuentes has formed this group, which to me just seems as a blatant attempt to just keep the money, only you got to change the name of the group.
Right, don't pay it to herself.
And wait until see, I mean, there's probably, my guess would be, I mean, this is kind of like when there's a hurricane and all kinds of people call up and say, oh, donate to the Hurricane Relief Fund, right? And and like one penny of it goes to Hurricane Relief and everybody keeps it. I imagine that there are political things like this that go on. And if you're the Trump campaign, you got to decide, who do you bother to knock off?
Well, I mean, why isn't just out and out, crime called fraud. But it is
fraud,
you know, I mean.
It is, but it isn't, but it's not illegal.
Well,
yeah.
I would say it was illegal to give it to individuals
charities. That part, they could get a campaign finance complaint and a fine out of that.
Well, the IRS could do it. You didn't give it, you said you had to give it to a charity, you didn't give it to the charity, it was yourself.
Well, they did give some money to charity. They gave out about, and I can't remember the exact amount, but they gave some money to a Boys and Girls Club in Weld County and to a Boy Scout troop.
Mm. Ah.
So they did give some money off to charity, which is perfectly legal for them to do. It's just the gifts to these board members, volunteers, whatever they happen to be,
is not allowed.
It's just flat out not allowed.
Well, there is, and you can go through the statutes and eventually come up with one to raise money or do things for one purpose and then use it for absolutely another. You defraud. It's defrauding people, saying, please give me money and we'll fight for the recall of Polis and pay ourselves and off to Trump, which these donors may or may not be for or against.
Well, it's an effort to continue fundraising, right?
She'll pay it to herself out of that committee board members out of that committee. I mean, it just seems to me if we had an attorney general who did anything other than file amicus briefs across the country.
But this isn't his area. This is the Secretary of State.
But fraud is his area.
That's true.
And so with DAs. I mean, if this was done by anybody else, I mean, really are at a point because you have a attorney general who has his own agenda. I mean, he makes no qualms about it. He's got his own agenda. You have what everybody perceives as a crooked, dishonest Secretary of State who spends
her
time.
You don't have to comment on that, Miriam.
Well, you don't have to. I mean, she's generally viewed by that as, who spends her time consulting with Planned Parenthood and how she should respond to various questions. I mean, it's just, and it was going to, was going to run for U.S. Senate, and then, when they told her
she wasn't a minority.
She didn't know. So I don't think I know anyone who has any trust in Jenna Griswold. I mean, no one.
And the
Attorney General, I think people view her as really just simply a political operative and a disgrace in the office. Weiser, I think, has not given anybody much hope that he'll do anything else but have a political agenda. And maybe that's what he's elected for. Maybe that's what the people want him to do, to go after Trump and everything
else. Here's my question, though, because here's what I wonder. And we briefly talked off there, and I want to get your take on this. From the beginning, I've wondered about these people. Are they some sort of, maybe not Democrat Party sanctioned, but some sort of Democrat operative working to undermine them? Or are they just con artists?
Seen no evidence from following them on social media and talking to people. I've seen no evidence that they have any ties whatsoever to
Democrats.
Party.
That's kind of what I've heard, too.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Though it is strange. I mean, while they raised 114 groups to resist the
didn't
recall.
Didn't raise anything even close to that.
Yeah.
But look what they got done. They mobilized people all over the state. They had a great ground game.
You know,
I watched that for months while they were getting
set up to do this.
They had a great ground game.
But the other side, I mean, the people who didn't want polls recalled, there was a very active group.
Absolutely. That's another issue I want to bring up.
Sure.
Okay.
you had two different groups, one called Democracy First Colorado and the other called Our Colorado Way of Life, who very early, before the Polis recall got started, this goes back to when Tom Sullivan was being targeted.
Okay.
Got very active in the anti-recall movement, going out, knocking on doors, telling people not to sign petitions, that kind of thing. They started off with Tom Sullivan. They got a boatload of money. It's like $900,000.
Yeah,
they raised a lot of money.
A lot of
it from the gun control side.
Everytown
for Gun Safety, Moms
Bloomberg,
Demand, all those different groups gave them lots and lots of money. Now, the one of the things I've been watching for, and unfortunately we won't know this for about another 2 weeks yet, so
keep your eyes peeled for Colorado politics,
because I'm ready to jump on this. The governor sent out two emails soliciting funds to fight the recall. The first one was when the recall was going on against him. The second one was when all the rest of them dropped off, except for the one against Leroy Garcia.
Okay.
And that one's still going on until, I think they've got until the 18th to turn in their signatures, right? So he sends out these fundraising emails that says, please send me money so we can fight the recalls. Guess where that money went? Didn't go to Democracy First. Didn't go to Our Colorado Way of
Life.
Went to Polis. Went to Polis's campaign committee.
You're kidding.
I kid you not. So, and not one penny of it. I have not seen one penny of it sent to the groups that were actually doing the work to fight the recall.
So he was allegedly, at least as far as we know right now. Now, of course, watch tomorrow at like 3 o'clock. You go watch boom, the file. He will give them like $20 or something like that. Now that you've made that public. So what you're saying.
Let me just finish. I've written two stories about this. It's already out there.
Okay. So he then, what Polis did is essentially use the recall efforts to fundraise. But didn't bother to give it to. He has plenty of money.
As far as we know, we aren't going to know until the 15th whether he actually sent any of that money
to the groups,
the groups that are actually doing the anti-recall work.
That's interesting. That's pretty well, and we know there's going to be legislation. That's kind of that can't sit very well if you're Leroy Garcia, right? And if you're somebody like or Tom Sullivan who's got to worry about fighting this, I guess he had money, but
well, but once again, I'm I guess I can go through enough criminal statutes and figure out where I could kind of fit it in, but. But it does seem that, you know, raising money for false purposes, saying you're going to do A and you have no intention of doing A constitutes a fraud on the public. And not that the DA is going to, that's a joke. But I would imagine at some point some local DA may kind of go, I think I'll charge Polis.
Well, we had the same situation on the Republican side and the recall. And this one was for Dismiss and Resist Polis, where you had Values First, the House GOP committee.
Values First Colorado.
This is the one that's run by the minority leader and his brother. Well, they were also sending out emails saying, send us money, we're going to fight the recall. Didn't send the money to the recall committees until I started writing about it and saying, if you're raising this money, why haven't the recall committee seen any of it? And the recall people told me that they were a little bit frustrated by the conversations they were having about them fundraising and not sending them the money. Now, so they did get a check for about $5,000.
Well, they also set up a separate committee that it was devoted.
Take Back Colorado was devoted to the recall.
Yeah, because we're friends with Patrick Neville, so I'm going to, because I know he's been on the show and talked about this a little bit, and I don't want to get too deep in the weeds, but I think he would refute that and said that they did have this other committee. But let's go back.
They didn't set that committee up until well after
they
had sent out the fundraising emails, a good month.
What about, though, back to this Polis thing, because again...
Well, I want to bring up one other thing. I mean, one of the things that the groups did, and their videos of it, is that they'd harass, physically attack people going out and getting signatures.
The anti-Polis recall people.
Yeah, there were some incidents in Jefferson County that I know of.
So that's a very active way. If you're trying to stop a recall, one of the best ways to do it is head up the recall yourself. Which is really what they did. And the official recall. The bad recall Polis, only thing they did with the money was, in fact, fight the recall.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, no, and give it to themselves.
No. Oh, well, and give it to themselves.
Well, but the vast majority of that money went for radio and banners and buttons and T-shirts, all of it against the recall.
So why would you do that? I mean, I understand
what's the
motive if you're not a corrupt group? I mean, I can understand you're saying, this isn't our thing, but we're not going to help. We're not going to do anything. But to fight someone else's one when all you've been set up for is to help recall polls. I mean, it's a bizarre.
That's a question you're going to have to ask Julianne Refrentis.
Well, we tried.
Oh, believe me, so have I. She has never returned a phone call.
Well, here's
Julie
what happened.
Got to talk to her.
We'll tease this before. She kind of, I think, unintentionally, she's a slick character.
Yeah.
And she's able to con some people. And
males.
Guys. And unfortunately,
women too.
She came here and she did not con us, and then she stormed out. But
she's got you. She probably would have conned me. I would have gone for it. You know what I mean?
I'm like, no. So Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden here with Marianne Goodland with Colorado Politics. Okay. I just heard Stefan has some breaking news on the phone. So everybody hang on. We're going to go to Stefan with the breaking news. And then we'll go to a break. No,
okay.
Stefan first. Hey Stefan,
Chuck,
what's
Julie,
going on?
Good afternoon. Good afternoon to you. Just got the coroner's report in the death investigation of Kate Rafferty Petracco.
Okay.
And the breaking news is this after a obviously weeks-long process of the autopsy and even a second opinion by the Denver County coroner, Dr. Jim Caruso, the official cause of death has been ruled a suicide, asphyxiation by hanging. I've read the entire 16-page report. We'll obviously talk about this much more this afternoon, but this is the story. If people haven't been paying attention, you know, connections with the Petracco Farms family, one side of the story that, you know, she was obviously dealing with a very tumultuous divorce from an abusive ex-husband who has a record. Many of the members of the Rafferty family said that there's no way this woman would have killed herself. They felt it was something more nefarious, all the way up to murder. The Petracco family, David Petracco Jr., her ex-husband, they were in the process just days away from getting that divorce final. He had said no. He was never listed as a suspect, but the breaking news is out of the Adams and Broomfield County Coroner's Office, the death of Kate Rafferty Petracco on July 14th has been ruled a suicide, asphyxiation by hanging. And we'll have much more coming up this afternoon, guys.
Let me ask you about this, though, too, because I think it's important to kind of throw into this mix that she had claimed, and apparently nothing has refuted this, that she was having an affair with the Adams County District Attorney.
As well as having a relationship with the Adams County Sheriff at the same time.
So this was the Adams County Coroner, which I think complicated matters to say,
the least.
Any sense of how this plays out with all of that?
Well, I can tell you, and Julie, you know the frustration that I've been up against when, you know, you get that response after months of inquiry, we can't comment because of an ongoing investigation. I give the Adams and Broomfield County Coroner's Office big credit for sending this out without the normal channels that one would have to go through. I was told that I would have to submit something,
right.
I would have to pay a fee, and then maybe they'd get back to me. So kudos for that. The relationship that was in a sworn affidavit between Petracco and District Attorney Dave Young, you know, the family doesn't like to call it an affair. Well, whatever you call it, she was in a relationship, and both of them admitted to that. The relationship had ended earlier this year. There have been other allegations. She was involved with other people within the Adams County government. You know, Chuck mentioned the sheriff. Those are all just rumors at this point, or at least the sheriff's part. But in a sworn affidavit, she was in a relationship with Dave Young. They had to, and remember when I was telling you about this maybe a month and a half ago, you know, part of these divorce proceedings, because she ended up working for the victim's,
the DA's office.
Up. She managed it.
Yeah.
In Adams County, they had to put. They had to put this down to Jefferson County. It's been a convoluted mess.
Yes.
And certainly I can say this, guys, the Rafferty family will not be happy with reading the results. But I've read this 16-page autopsy, and there were no signs of forced struggle. They go down, of course, in these things, as you both know, they go extremely into detail. They look at what's under the fingernails. They look at the toxicity levels of everything. Her blood alcohol level was at 0.04, which is well under the legal limit. There were no other signs of toxins or chemicals that may have been administered to her. She did have many drugs in her system. That would be consistent with someone dealing with depression.
That can be a huge amount of things. Xanax, painkillers, everything else.
Yeah. Xanax and Prozac. Nothing, though, that Chuck would indicate that anything that she had ingested. But the strangest part of all, and we'll get more into this afternoon, the strangest thing is the manner in which she hanged herself was with a cable from a piece of gym equipment that she had then apparently put around her neck and attached a 45-pound weight to it. This is somebody that, the details of this are certainly incredibly sad. More than anything, as I've indicated with you guys, there are two 10-year-old little kids, twins, a little boy and a little girl, without their mother.
Well, and also with her mother's reputation. With her mother's reputation,
yeah, this
destroyed.
Is all too bad.
You got to remember that too. Their mother's reputation has been destroyed.
Yeah. Oh, so. Stefan. All right. Well, good job staying on that.
Thanks, guys.
Obviously much more on your show. So thank you for checking in. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get back with Marianne Goodlin from Colorado Politics on the bad recall Polis group, which I think is nothing but a bunch of con artists, but we'll get back to that after this. Be right back.
Now, back to Chuck Bonneville and Julie Hayden on News Talk 710 KNUS.
Bonneville, Julie Hayden here with Colorado Politics, wonderful reporter who's covering this entire recall Polis mess. I do want to say, it's really sad to read about the deaths of John Westergaard. I mean Westergaard
and John Esslin,
because there are very few people who have the respect from all parties, and they really did. They were two great journalists.
Yeah, I worked with John.
Thank you.
Yeah,
we have just been devastated.
Sure. Yeah, that's awfully sad. Well, we're going, and I want to clarify before we get back into it, because we get a lot of texts and emails with it. And there was, and I'm just going to be, I can call them this, Marianne. I know you can't. There was a good recall Polis group and the bad recall Polis group. The good recall Polis group is the dismiss Polis campaign that actually went out, pulled petitions, gathered signatures.
And as we were talking to off air with Marianne, they really went out there.
Worked very hard.
They had businesses lined up in dozens and dozens of Colorado counties where you could go in and sign a petition.
Yep.
Somewhere between 45 and 50, if I remember correctly.
And they gathered, by their calculations, 300,000 signatures. And everything I saw them do was on the up and up.
And
we heard a few snarky remarks by, who was it?
The mean recall Polis people.
No. Oh, God. You always hear him. Eric Sonderman. He's got an ad for him right here.
Oh.
Claiming he didn't believe
it. Oh, they didn't believe
said.
The numbers.
You know, Eric, you don't always have to be snarky.
Whatever they got. Right. They worked hard to get it.
They worked very hard.
But in the meantime, there was this group that called themselves the official Polis group. Nothing official about it
other than the fact that they decided that that's what they would call themselves.
Right, which sounds good. And before that, they were the official recall Hickenlooper group where they did nothing.
Right.
Then they became the official Polis group where they did nothing except raise money. And now they've become a Trump kind of something, and the Trump campaign, the real Trump people have said they may
Trump
take
people.
Legal action against them if they don't quit calling themselves that. And what we were talking about is your story where you revealed that the campaign finance reports indicate that they paid themselves first as gifts, then it was going to be as a consultant. And my question to you is,
thirdly, they went to Channel 31 and said it was. They just gave it to him because his board members needed the money. I mean, bizarre.
I'm sorry, that's not covered under campaign.
Right. Yeah, right.
Let me ask you this, because we're talking really about a small group of people. This is not
correct.
A big group.
No.
So can you be your own consultant? In other words, if I form a committee to do something, can I then pay myself out of the money I raise as a consultant?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Yes, but, and the committees that I've seen do that, I spend way too much time playing the tracer, I gotta tell you. I need an intervention or something. Lots and lots of committees will have someone that's being paid to do the work, whether it's doing the tracer filings or running the office or whatever. It's not unusual to see a person who's running a committee to pay themselves as a consultant for doing that kind of thing. The problem that the official recall group had is that the monies that they paid out to those three individuals, they had never paid them a penny prior to those checks for any other work.
Right.
And that's where it sort of doesn't meet the smell test as to whether this was a consultant payment or a gift.
Well, and they made it clear.
They made it clear that it was a gift. Even in the updated filing, it still comes off as a gift.
They just give it to themselves. And in the meantime, again, they've created this other...
Juliandra has this other committee that she controls. So if she's smart...
Well,
then
she's canny, at least.
Well, she can transfer it to another committee. If she wanted to, I think she could probably send it off to the RNC to put toward the Trump campaign.
Well, she's not doing that.
But, that remains to be seen.
Well, let me ask you, because this to me raises a broader question, of which, you know, and Chuck, you were hinting at it, is that, you know, very little is actually done when campaign finance laws are violated. You get people Matt Arnold, who spends years of his life trying to get it, and then people ignore it.
In fact, the Democrats, who really were highly active in resisting Polis, the Polis recall, they even filed ethics complaints saying that, you know, their idea of 1999...
It was a campaign finance complaint, not an ethics complaint.
Okay, campaign finance complaint. Right. Saying you can't do that, which, quite frankly, that means that probably every politician in Colorado is in violation.
The rule is that if you give a committee $20, you have to be identified by name, occupation, and address.
Right.
And the name of your employer. The claim that these, what they called the Polis penny, and this was actually a complaint filed against the dismiss group,
right?
Okay, was that if you gave the committee $20, they gave you a penny back.
Right.
Well, and in lots of conversations that I had with Karen Cataline, their spokesperson, they gave those pennies out to all kinds of people. This was not a way.
It wasn't a way to make it less than $20.
It was not an attempt to avoid skirt the disclosure laws.
I think it was just a PR
thing. And the Secretary of State dismissed that complaint.
Right.
Yeah, well, and people, I've been in, you know, lots of campaigns, and they kind of, well, I'll give you $20 and say, well, then you'll have to do all this reporting. And so how do I avoid that? He gives $19.99, you give him a penny. I mean, that is standard operating procedure.
Not as common as you might think. In fact,
well, I've run hundreds of campaigns, and I've seen everyone do it. So if it's not common,
I don't know what it is. But I think, though, her point is that this the good Polis people, this was not a ruse that they were running. It was more about...
Well, but most campaigns run that ruse because you tell people...
I understand,
people,
Chuck,
but... Well, wait a minute. You tell people they're going to have to do all this disclosure for $20. So how do I avoid that? You gave us $19.99, and they say, give me a penny back. And they avoid it. And you'll see 1999 contributions in Polis' campaign. You will see it in Hickenlooper's campaign. You will see it in Cory Gardner's campaign. You will see it in every large campaign there is. And for them to file a campaign finance one, it shows you how aggressive they were. They were highly aggressive.
Absolutely. Look at how much money they raised.
Right.
Right. And these are the people fighting the recall. When we come back, I want to ask you, so, I mean, because to me it appears, and I'll just say this, my suspicion is that this bad recall Polis group simply existed to raise money for these people to distribute to themselves, which they did.
Well, maybe they didn't start out that way.
I don't think they started out that
but
way.
But But how do then, what do you do about that, I guess?
Well, you don't hire Scott Gessler, quite frankly. I mean, Scott has his own controversy, but you don't hire Scott Gessler because you're planning to run a con, because he would generally speaking not want to get paid by a con group.
That's one of the things that I'm fascinated by. They have one of the best campaign finance experts in the entire state,
right?
And they're doing this kind of stuff,
right?
Well, and who knows what they're telling him or not telling him. Hey, we got to say that to when we come back. Julie Hayden, Chuck Bonnewell, and Marianne Goodland talking about the bad recall Polis group, and we'll have more when we come back.
Down to 2020, the war for America's soul. Get tickets and complete details at 710knus.com.
All right, Chuck Bonnewell, Julie Hayden, with Marianne Goodland, the great reporter for Colorado Politics, talking about the bad Polis and the good Polis.
Recall groups
and all of it.
Well, I want to go to the bad Polis group. So let's go over that again too. So you're, because it's, we don't, you know, if we can pick on Jared Polis, and I know that's not your point, but we're happy to. So he has his own, some questions you brought up at the beginning of the show. Let's just go over that again. So people are raising money to fight the recall efforts,
but the money doesn't necessarily wind up in the pockets of the people working on the and this is the anti-recall.
The anti-recall. Yeah. And they ended up in Polis's campaign.
Campaign committee. If you follow, and I followed the links because I wanted to see where it was going. And it went to his campaign. But the thing that's interesting about this is he hasn't filed for re-election for 2022.
Mm. So what's he need to campaign for?
Well, and I asked that question too. And apparently the way the rules work is that you continue to file campaign finance reports for the committee. But what the candidate does is a kind of a separate thing. Well, so he hasn't filed. He has not. In fact, there's only one person who's actually filed to run for governor in 2022.
Who's that?
Greg Lopez.
Oh, that's right. That's right. That's right. We had him on.
That's the only person so far who has filed for the governor's race in 2022. And he just filed here within the last month, I think. Yeah.
Right. Well, you know that most of the time when people are, you know, shifting money off to themselves and all those things is because they don't have much money. Polis
has money.
Has plenty of money. I mean, no lack of money on that side.
You got to remember that Polis has limited all campaign donations to his committee to $100 or less. So we're not talking about you know, $5,000. Well, you can't make that kind of, your maximum allowed, I think, is $1,150, $1,175, something like that. $1,150. Yeah. So he's not getting $1,000 contributions or even $500 contributions from people because he has made it a point of limiting those donations.
Okay. Well, we'll see. So he has to, just to clarify, so for people can keep an eye on this, then he has 2 weeks.
In about 2 weeks, the committee's next tracer report, which is the campaign finance system that the Secretary of State maintains, in 2 weeks, we're supposed to see that next report. And we'll know whether he took any of that money, assuming that he had money come in, and why not?
You know, right.
See if he sent any of that money over to these two other committees.
Or if he kept it. Yeah. Right.
Which also have campaign finance reporting deadlines at roughly the same time.
Well, let me, we got you here, and you're such a wealth of knowledge on so many things. What is your view of 2020? I know we have our own view of 2020.
Of which?
Of, yeah, yeah.
Of what?
Of the three things.
We got about 5 minutes.
The senatorial race
in Colorado.
Yes, Colorado, and the state and the House race in Colorado.
That's my focus. There are other people at Colorado Politics that handle the U.S. Senate, the presidential race, and all that.
Okay.
I don't get that much into it. What I do get into is the state House and Senate races, and I think we have a very, very interesting situation shaping up for the state Senate. You have two sort of top-tier races that the Democrats are targeting and two top-tier races that the Republicans are targeting. And then there's a secondary tier race that's also. Yeah. So you have these five races that are going to be key.
Well, you said two and two. What's the fifth one?
Four top tier and one second
and
tier.
And one second tier I know of. And some of this is based on reporting that we've already done. The top targets for the Democrats are the seats in Henderson that are held by Kevin Priola.
Okay.
Yes.
And the seat that Jack Tate in Centennial is walking away from. He decided not to run for re-election.
Right,
So, and you've got Suzanne Sterrett, the former Deputy Secretary of
State. Yeah, who we talked about before.
Who is running for that. And we've got at least one Democrat, I think, has filed for it. We're kind of waiting to see whether Tom Sullivan throws his name in for it.
Mm.
He's riding the wave right now.
Right.
Both from the recall efforts, his sponsorship of Red Flag, all that kind of stuff. So
if I were him, I'd stay where he is.
That's boring. Yeah.
He'd make
a good candidate, I think.
Yeah. Well, he's done very well. He's got a good selling point.
Yeah.
What the Republicans, the seats that they're going after is Rachel Zinsinger's seat in Arvada. And this is the one that's bounced back and forth between her and Laura Woods
over the last couple of elections.
Yes. So that's one of their targets. The other one, and this one fascinates me, is the seat held by Jeff Bridges down in Centennial and Arapahoe County and Greenwood Village, area down there. And Jeff Bridges is the most aggressive campaigner you will ever meet. And for the Republicans to target him, I find interesting. He's running for election. He replaced Daniel Kagan.
Okay.
Who resigned.
He resigned after the bathroom thing.
So he is now running for election to the Senate for the first time.
He was appointed, and now he's running.
He was appointed, and now he has to run. He has to stand for election in November 2020. The second tier seat, and this one appeals to me because of my love for rural Colorado and the southeastern portion of the state especially, is the seat that's held by Larry Crowder, who is term limited.
Okay.
And we've had some action on that one. We've got two Republicans already signed up to run for that and a Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So a lot going on.
Well, let me ask you about...
Wait, we got about 1 minute.
I know. Well, I'll give a 15-second question for you. In my view, the mail balloting with harvesting has changed Colorado elections. Totally.
Absolutely. Oh, just absolutely.
Totally. And not probably...
I think that's why we're seeing all that action in Centennial.
Well, but as a practical matter, I mean, the Republicans simply do not have the ability to compete with the Democrats on ballot harvesting because they simply do not have the equivalent of Planned Parenthood, CEA, the SEIU, and everything else.
They've got the money. They just don't have the ground game.
They have no ground game, but they'll never have a
ground
game.
That's what we've been saying.
And you know, unless they get a ground game or change the laws either by court or by going to ballot, they'll never be competitive again in a statewide race, ever. We watched in Adams County and Arapahoe County where they just delivered all the ballots at about 5 o'clock, where all the Adams County officials were ahead, and then all of these picked up ones, and it was like 90-1. I mean, yeah. It was just unbelievable.
Now it's going to be interesting, Marianne. We've got about 30 seconds left, so thank you for coming on. I appreciate it.
I didn't get
to
ask you about
welcome.
The Colorado Ethics Commission. I'm sure a lot of you have back for
John,
that.
John, you had John Hickenlooper still.
We're still waiting to see. We're waiting to see a formal hearing to be set for these ethics complaints.
All right.
There's been some interesting activity going on with that. There was an investigative report that was completed back in June, and usually when they complete those reports, they turn them over to each party, and then presumably one of them would give that to me.
But listen, the music is playing, so we're going to have to leave everybody on the edge of their seats
fast.
On
it's
that.
Been great to have you.
Just watch Colorado politics.
Absolutely.
I will report when there's something that
all
happens.
Right. Absolutely.
All right.
Great
thank
idea
you very
to
much.
Do.
Chuck and Julie here. We'll be right back.